Mr. Pop.
Views and opinions of this show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of this network and its affiliates.
It's time for another edition of the Sport Diehards with your host, Steve Itzkowitz. Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Sport Diehards. I am your host, Steve Itzkowitz. And can you tell how excited I am? Oh, my Lord. I've been looking forward to this show like the end of 2016. One thing about 2017 that I predict right off the bat, we won't see as many celebrity deaths. How can we? Because look what happened last year. There's got to be less this year by the law of averages. So for those that are depressed over 2016, 2017 is going to be a better year. I promise you that for everybody. It's going to be fantastic. And we're going to begin the show with that attitude, with a lot of enthusiasm. We're going to have some fun tonight. Looking back on the NFL season, the NFL MVP, the NFL LVP, the least valuable player, the biggest surprises of 2016 NFL, good, bad, and ugly. The real reason why Rex Ryan got fired, why Ronda Rousey is now a cautionary tale, and why she deserves a new nickname, which I'll go over in a second, and the 2017 college football playoff national championship rematch between Clemson and Alabama, and the worst part about that, along with reacting to the Rose Bowl and USC returning to Rose Bowl prominence, getting their first Rose Bowl victory in 12 years, actually, the last one being 2004. When they beat Michigan and held up, and when Matt Leiner was there. We will react to that particular game and much, much more, and discuss also the Los Angeles Lakers' recent issues with playing down to their opponent, and giving an explanation as to why that was the case for them throughout the month of December and into October, or into January, apparently. We're more loaded than Donald Trump for this show, so let's just get into it. If you have an opinion, give me a call, 646-668-8467 and enter 1 so that you get into the queue and I can activate your mic. 646-668-8467. I want to give a shout out to my man Hank Tran. I know he wants to hear about the Rose Bowl. And Hank, if you want to chime in, just send me a text message and I will activate your mic. I know you usually call in to listen, but if you want to chime in, especially on the Rose Bowl, go ahead and let me know. We're going to begin with looking back on the 26th. Well, actually, let's begin on a fun note here. Let's have some fun. My boss on Radio AFS, Mr. Jacob, wanted to bring a little bit more pep to the show. So I plan to get a little sillier in the show. I plan to push the edge just a little bit. And I plan to say some things that you might think, did he just actually say that? Well, that's what I plan to do in this show and throughout the year because, you know, at the end of the day, I know sports. The reason why I have a sports talk show is because I know sports. There's no refuting that. But what I need to bring is a little bit more pep, a little bit more humor to the show, and I'm going to begin with that by telling you the real reason why Rex Ryan got fired. Now, obviously, Rex Ryan had a reputation coming to the Buffalo Bills that he was a man of defense, but not a man that really understood offense. Kind of the Jeff Fisher of the AFC, having gone to the Jets and then the Buffalo Bills in the same division, no less, trying to be everything that Bill Belichick has been in the AFC East, which is successful. Which brings me to the following point. Why he was never destined to have success as an NFL head coach is because he is the only head coach in the NFL with a known nickname. Now, what's his nickname? Sexy Rexy, a man known for having a foot fetish. Now, if I'm a football player for the Buffalo Bills and Rex Ryan is my coach and I find out that his nickname is Sexy Rexy and that he has a foot fetish, my first thinking is this man supposed to help me be better as a football player? Or are you supposed to help me be more lucky with the ladies? Sexy Rexy. The most successful NFL head coaches don't have nicknames. We just know them by name because they're that successful. Tom Coughlin, formerly of the Giants, the aforementioned Bill Belichick. You might call him the Minister of Defense. Well, actually, that was Reggie White, but I digress. Mike Tomlin of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike McCarthy of the Green Bay Packers. Guys like Andy Reid of the Kansas City Chiefs, previously the Eagles, when he went to 5 straight NFC Championship games and won Super Bowl and lost to the Patriots. These guys don't have nicknames. And the reason for that is because they don't need a nickname for people to recognize how good they are. But what we recognized most about Rex was his press conferences and the crazy things he would say, the Super Bowl predictions he would make for his team that never came to fruition. And then we find out he has a foot fetish. And his football players got to be thinking, who in the name am I playing for? Now, football players love playing for Rex Ryan because Rex Ryan was the type of guy to hold them accountable. He let players be who they are. And that's fine if you win. But if you don't win and you're known as Sexy Rexy and you have an NFL owner that wants to maximize his investment and get that playoff revenue, it's not going to go very well, particularly when you're a defensive mind whose offenses can't make a defensive job hold up. It's just that simple. Sexy Rexy, you know, maybe if you hear that, you might say, ow! But if you're a football player or a pro football fan, is the idea of Sexy Rexy being your head coach really that exciting to you? Only if he's throwing parties after a game in which when people get into they make them realize why they call him Sexy Rexy, because he is good with the ladies and can draw the ladies out and make any fan or football player happy. But then there's the matter of the games, and that's what it's all about, is the games. And if you're the head coach of a football team playing a game known as Sexy Rexy with a foot fetish, how effective are you going to be with in-game adjustments? Honestly, how are you going to be effective as a football coach? Because football is a real serious game. We take it seriously in this country because, as you know, the United States is a warlike country. We're always at war with something, whether it be drugs, politicians, ethics, celebrity deaths last year, black people versus the police. There's always a war going on in this country. We take ourselves way too seriously, which is why at times I think I take myself way too seriously, trying to keep up with how serious this country is. But we should be having fun. And I think Rex Ryan will be a lot of fun to watch on TV. I think he'll be a fabulous TV analyst because he'll say a lot of crazy things. But he won't be as held accountable for it because, well, he'll be a member of the media. As we all know, nothing the media says they're held accountable for because, well, that's what they do. They hold people accountable, but to hold them accountable, ho, 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 the media is beyond reproach, right? Yeah. And I am Donald Trump, by the way. Mm-mm, don't think so. But I digress. Point is that he has no business being a head football coach. But he's great for football. And if he decides to fulfill what he should do next, having been a great defensive coordinator and for about a minute, a hot New York minute, no pun intended, a decent NFL head coach before he was more exposed than a $2 hooker in Hollywood on a Friday night, he really needs to go the TV route and let that be. You know what? He could be John Gruden, only funnier. Much funnier. And even John Gruden, you notice how he's loosened up. He's no longer Chucky. He's John Gruden. Doesn't go. You don't get any Chucky-isms out of him when he's doing a Monday Night Football game. Rex Ryan could be all that in a bag of chips, make similar amount of money, and be funnier. So Sexy Rexy, go to TV. Because TV, if there's one thing TV can't have enough of, it's sexiness and men who have foot fetishes. Now that will drive the ladies wild. And NFL players that used to play for you will get a really, really good laugh out of that. I think it's going to be absolutely fabulous. ESPN, draw up the contract. Or go to CBS or go to Fox or go wherever you want to go because there's plenty of networks showing the NFL. Maybe you should go to the NFL Network, actually. I think he'd fit in really well there with Rich Eisenberg, Marshall Faulk, and the next stabbing Michael Irvin. You know, because we know how intense Michael Irvin gets. Rex Ryan could really even him out and bring a lighter side to a serious NFL show that is hosted by Rich Eisen on the NFL Network. I think that's the way for Rex Ryan to go. And it would still have NFL in it. He's an NFL guy. So it's a match made in heaven. And it would be heavenly to watch him on TV. Wax poetic on all things football. I'm going to take a quick break here because we've got some text messages coming in. I want to see what those messages are, but not read them and try to talk at the same time. Because reading messages and talking at the same time is like reading text messages and driving at the same time. The difference is that talking is not nearly as dangerous. as texting and driving. And hopefully no one did that over this New Year's weekend. That was absolutely fabulous, by the way. So I'm going to be back in a few minutes to talk about the most annoying aspect of the college football playoff national championship rematch between the Clemson Tigers and the Alabama Crimson Tide. Then we'll look back on the Rose Bowl, look back on the 2016 NFL season, a little Lakers talk. We're going to at least 8:30, possibly 9 o'clock. I scheduled for 90 minutes here. So we are going to have you covered, well-informed and laughing throughout this show, hopefully. So please don't go anywhere. Check out Shine With Me by POD. This is a really good song that I listened to before the show, and I think you'll like it as well. We'll be back on the other side. You listen to Sport Diehards on Radio AFS, radioafs.com, facebook.com/radioafs, facebook.com/thesportdiehards. Don't go anywhere. To the Sport Diehards with your host, Steve Itzkowitz. That was Shine With Me by POD. And I wonder what the POD stands for. Could it be Points On Demand? Well, that's certainly points were on demand when Alabama faced Washington in the semifinal game in the college football playoff, because there weren't that many points in that particular game. Washington going up against an Alabama defense that was just way too strong, led by Jonathan Allen. and Washington also kind of having that deer in the headlight looks offensively, even though defensively they played really, really well. I'm also going to react to Lane Kiffin getting fired a week before he would leave to take over Florida Atlantic University and why he and Nick Saban were a match made in heaven in terms of a couple of guys. Well, actually, that leads me into a rant about the rematch between the Clemson Tigers and Alabama Crimson Tide in the national championship game that I want to get into. A lot of people are excited about it. I'm not. And here's why. It's another week of Nick Saban press conferences. Have you heard his press conferences? It makes you want to invest in the most sophisticated advanced pair of earplugs that there are in the world, because Nick Saban, he makes Bill Belichick look like Rex Ryan, put it that way. Okay. I like to call him no personality Nick, because he has no personality except one that is berating anger and just a little too intense. He's so intense, I swear to God, that if he says something the wrong way, he's going to shatter like apple crisps. You know, it's like, Nick, where's the joy for the success you've had in college football? Where's the gratitude? You know, all the money that you made to do exactly what you love, what you were born to do? And your press conferences have no personality whatsoever. I remember the movie The Blind Side with Sandra Bullock, when Nick Saban visited their home to talk with Michael Orr, you know, a star offensive lineman in that movie. And Sandra Bullock remarked, you know, I find him to be incredibly handsome. And I know there's a lot of women out there that find him to be incredibly handsome, which is kind of sad when you think about it, because if you combine it with some kind of personality, you know, the kind of personality that makes people laugh before he even says anything, gets a look on his face, and people just start busting out in laughter because you know something funny is coming. That's not Nick Saban. He's wildly successful as a football coach, and he is considered to be good-looking by a lot of women, and that's all good, but he's got no personality. He's got a freaked-up personality. You know, I was going to say something else there, but we try to keep this a family-friendly show, so no curse words on the show. But he's got an effed-up personality, put it that way. That's why I call him No Personality Nick. And that's exactly what we're going to have to deal with leading up to this championship game are his press conferences. And if he wins the game, which they probably will, although I think Clemson has got a fighting chance because Alabama's offense not looking too great right now, then we have to listen to the press conference afterwards, in which you're not going to know if he won or not, because he's not going to celebrate. He's not going to go rah-rah, sis-boom-ba. There's going to be no pep coming out of him. You know, he's only going to be surly the whole time, as if this is something that is expected, that this is something that he should do. I should win because I'm the head coach of Alabama. I'm Nick Saban. No, you're no personality, Nick. And at some point, and even Kobe Bryant late in his career would show his personality. He would laugh and he would giggle and he'd do all those things. And mind you, you don't want to hear men giggling too much because, well, that doesn't sound manly. You know, a man going, I'm not sure. When a man laughs, it should be like, ha, 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 like the jolly green giant. Makes a man want to go, ow, but I digress. The point is, if Nick Saban wins that game, you're not going to know it. I mean, when you win a championship, you celebrate. That's how it works. No, he's going to be thinking about the next recruiting class. He's going to be thinking about next season. And he's going to be thinking about, oh, God, now I have to go home to my wife who's going to treat me much the same as I treat my assistant head coaches. I bet that's what happens. And maybe that's not as surly as he is because his home life is anything but pleasant. He goes home, the wife becomes the man of the house, right? That's usually how it goes. And then when he shows up at his office at Alabama, a place that he is literally the king of, if there was royalty in this country, Nick Saban would be the outright ruler and dictator in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. You know, he becomes how his wife treats him at home, right? So maybe that's why he's so surly all the time, or maybe he just needs to get laid more often. I don't know. The point is, and you would think he would, by the way, being that he's so good-looking, but I digress. I'm sorry, was that a little bit pushing the envelope there that I actually used the L word on this show? Holy moly. There's some pep for you right there. But smile more, Nick, if you win this championship. If you lose this championship, be as pissed off as you can be. And blame the officials, because that's usually how that goes. But if you win this game, show a little joy. Show a little fun. It's okay. It won't make you any less successful as a head coach in college football. It won't make you any less appealing. It'll make you more appealing. It won't make you any less interesting. And he is very interesting. I do find him interesting. That's why we're talking about it on the show. But what I find interesting about him, I find equally repulsive. And that's how abusive he can be with media members at press conferences. And I understand media members are annoying. I get that. I criticize media members all the time for asking stupid questions. All the time asking stupid questions. Asking a question that they're not going to get an answer to, but asking it anyways, which you're supposed to do. But what's the point of asking if you know you're not going to get an answer to it? You get credit just for asking? Is that how it works? Boy, it's really easy to have that job then, isn't it? But just smile, Nick. Enjoy yourself. It's a new year. And you're successful. Yeah, I know you live in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, but it could be worse. You could be living in, I don't know, Arkansas. To all people and members of the citizens of the state of Arkansas, please accept my apologies. I'm a huge fan of Bubba. Bill Clinton? Oh, yeah. Any man that handles his business in the Oval Office the way he did is fine by me, but I digress. Smile, Nick. Enjoy yourself. And let the rest of us enjoy you as well. And if you don't want to deal with Nick Saban, Dabo Swinney on the other side, ladies and gentlemen, oh, he'll give you some passion, especially if you're religious, highly religious man, very expressive. He'll give you a better press conference than no personality Nick will ever give to you. So that will even things out. And then the Clemson-Alabama game is going to be the second best game of the bowl season. Yes, it's going to be a great game. How could it not be? It's a rematch, and Clemson has got all the motivation in the world to try to stick it to Alabama, and may do it because Alabama's offense right now, given the transition from Lane Kiffin to Steve Sarkisian, who's Lane Kiffin light, as it were, with more personality, by the way. I find it interesting that Lane Kiffin and Nick Saban were able to work with each other as long as they did. Neither one. Lane Kiffin has even less personality than no personality Nick. And he's on his way to Florida Atlantic University. And I read an article today about some of the things he said. Yeah, Obama gets about 52% of my taxes. My ex-wife gets about, so I only get 9%, and I live in Tuscaloosa. Well, Lane, if you had remained an offensive coordinator at USC and decided that and recognized early on that you were never destined to be a successful head coach, a la Rex Ryan, who at least had some personality, then maybe you wouldn't be living in Tuscaloosa and turning over 91% of your money to the government and to your ex-wife. But you made your bed, sleep in it, and now you're going to Florida Atlantic University. But hey, Florida's a nice place. It's a real nice place. And he's going to Florida Atlantic University, which is in South Florida, which is about as nice as it gets. A little more humid than Southern California, but very, very nice. You'll enjoy it there, Lane. In anonymity, by the way, because no one will give a damn how good or how bad you do at Florida Atlantic University because, well, it's Florida Atlantic University. Probably more well-known for being located near the Atlantic Ocean than for any sports program that they may have at this time. So they and Lane will be a perfect match for each other. Lane will bring some notoriety to them, no personality, and no coaching either, because we all know Lane can recruit him, he just can't coach him. But as an offensive coordinator, he's okay there. Maybe he should have signed up to be an offensive coordinator over there. And how do you get fired a week before you're going to leave for a new job anyways? Saying you live in Tuscaloosa and complaining about your taxes is a surefire way of doing, along with everything else you said about Nick Saban, disparaging on the way out. And I understand disparaging Nick Saban, but don't do so publicly because he's the most powerful man in the state of Alabama. I will guarantee you that. That's like bad-mouthing the most powerful man in the movie Sin City, played by Powers Booth, Senator Rourke. That's what Nick Saban is. He's Senator Rourke in the state of Alabama, but hopefully Alabama is not nearly as sinful as Sin City, although it wouldn't surprise me because in the Bible Belt, some people are trying to get away with stuff.
behind the Bible Belt, if you will. But I digress. Lane Kiffin and Nick Saban, wow. It's amazing they lasted as long as they did. Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian. Well, one thing I'll say about Sarkisian, he'll do well as an offensive coordinator, but he may do better showing Alabamans how to party, because one thing that dude can do is drink anyone under the table. Thank you, sir. Can I have another? Oh, wait. I got to practice in about 15 minutes. Hold off until after practice. Yeah, Steve Sarkisian can party with the best of them. He proved that at USC and at a USC pep rally. Imagine what the Alabama pep rallies are going to be like. Lord, please bless our team. Lord, please bless our team as we take the field of battle against our common opponent, the University of Auburn. And then Cesar Cazarezzo, and a shot to yet another victory over the University of Auburn. To your health. Well, to your health, Steve Sarkisian, don't do that at an Alabama pep rally. May not go over as well as it did in Southern California. I'm just saying. Be careful. And whatever you do, don't badmouth Nick Saban unless you know for sure that it's not going to get back to him, because he is a Senator Rourke of the state of Alabama. And Alabama is now officially Sin City. Ha! Ooh. I only watched Sin City earlier today. That's why I'm talking about it. That'll be the second best game. Clemson and Alabama will be the second best game of the bowl season. The best game, though, just got completed. And that was the granddaddy of them all, the Rose Bowl. Penn State, USC. USC coming in at 9-3, having an absolute terrible September, and then changing quarterbacks and getting to the Rose Bowl and winning that in the utmost of dramatic fashion, because Penn State's secondary, as was explained by my friend Hank Tran, listening to the show right now, and thank you, Hank, for your commentary on text messaging that I'll convey here, their secondary was the equivalent of Swiss cheese. A lot of holes in it, and Sam Darnold was just squeezing passes to that. Did you see that third down pass he created? He completed in the third quarter to Juju Smith-Schuster. Juju Smith-Schuster, as I like to call the candy man, because he's like Juju Bees out there. Sweet wide receiver, quite a sweet, but I digress. He completed that pass, throwing that ball up the middle. Somehow it was completed, and that's when I knew USC was going to win this game, because they had the momentum and they had the college football gods on their side, being back in the Rose Bowl, all because of a quarterback change. And it began Max Brown at the beginning of the season, and then they switched to Sam Darnold three games in. And Clay Helton, the head coach of USC, does a radio show interview with Keyshawn Johnson, George Sedano, and LZ Granderson on a morning radio show on ESPN Radio here in LA from 7 to 10 a.m. And they asked him, you know, what was the key to the turnaround of your success? He said, well, everyone embraced the brotherhood that is USC. We came together as a brotherhood. Everyone embraced each other, knew what they had to do, and they did it. Classic coach speak. Let me give you the real speak on that. Because I had the balls to sack my quarterback, Max Brown, who eventually transferred out. Oh, thank God. Not only did he not stick around, but he transferred out. And I decided to start a redshirt freshman at Sam Darnold with shoulders as broad as the city of L.A., which we know is more broad than a city. And that's why we came together as a brotherhood. It's amazing how much better the brotherhood that comes together can look when you got a quarterback in there that people compare to Matt Leinart and Carson Palmer, who were the last two Heisman Trophy winner quarterbacks at USC, prior to Reggie Bush being their last running back to win the Heisman Trophy at USC, like Charles White and Marcus Allen back in the day. That's why they came together, and that's why they got to the Rose Bowl, and that's why they won the Rose Bowl. So Clay Helton, sell this brotherhood all you want, and credit your team all you want. Even members of your team would have to turn around and say, Sam Darnold is the man. And he's the reason why UCLA is about to be second tier in L.A. yet again. And don't get me started on UCLA at this point, because I'm not happy about it. We got one more year with Josh Rosen, and I doubt we're going to win the USC game with them this year, just because Sam Darnold is that much better than Josh Rosen. And quite frankly, USC's team, even though they weren't particularly good against Saquon Walker, I want to say, the running back for Penn State. I don't think that was his last name, but Saquon something. was, you know, very effective at running back. So USC is going to have to show up the run defense next year if they want to be successful and possibly get into the college football playoff. We know what they'll be able to do offensively and defensively. They were pretty good against the pass, against Trace McSorley, but against Saquon, whatever his last name is, not so much. So, but that's really why the reason they came together. And I wish these coaches would just admit that. Just say, you know what? The reason why is because I tabbed Sam Darnold to start in place of Max Brown, and it just worked out. But he's got to give credit to the whole team, and I understand why a head coach would do that. But coach speak is boring. Tell us the truth, coach. It's because I sacked Max Brown, started Sam Darnold, and it worked out, and man, do I look good in the process? And, man, do I look like I could be the next Pete Carroll at USC, minus the personality. Because Clay Helton, this is a man who apologized for not being the big, sexy hire that L.A. looks for. You know, if they had hired Rex Ryan, now that would have been a sexy hire. Sexy Rexy and USC probably would have gone hand in hand, right? But it was Clay Helton instead. But Clay Helton is the right football coach for this team. That's exactly what USC needed. Instead of making the sexy, groundbreaking hire, make the right hire. Kind of like what I hope the 49ers will do now that they fired their head coach and their general manager. Thank God for that. One New Year's resolution out of the way early. Convince the 49ers to fire their general manager. Done. Checked off. Next. He was the right hire for USC. And he identified a quarterback, put him in there, and that quarterback produced 5 touchdowns against 1 interception and 453 yards in the Rose Bowl against a Penn State team that made a living this year of being a second-half team, which finally caught up with him in this game. I kind of felt like, you know, you've been playing with fire all year, kind of giving up leads in the first half, only to come back in the second half, and that worked for you. But USC was a whole different animal, as they proved against Washington when they beat that team like they did. And it kind of bit Penn State in the butt. So Penn State's adjustment next year is to be better at the beginning of the game and not rely on these second-half comebacks. That they seem to rely on this year before it burnt them against USC. That was Penn State's big issue this year, and that got more exposed in the Rose Bowl than some of the guys who decided to take off their shirt in the Rose Bowl just to show up that they can handle cold weather. And it was chilly at the Rose Bowl tonight. I know, because it's chilly over here. Over there, it'd be even chilly. It was about 48 degrees in the middle of that game. And you had guys exposing themselves, getting their shirts off. What's up with that? Ugh. There's having pep, and then there's having common sense. You can have both at a football game, but some of these guys don't. The point is USC is back. And as a UCLA fan, I hate to admit this, but they are back, and I hope UCLA puts it together next year and can beat USC for the Pac-12 South, even though USC will be enormously favored, and they should be, because of Sam Darnold, and their defense will probably get a little bit better against the run. But at this point, they are Rose Bowl champions, and for a lot of people that are saying Penn State should have been in the Final Four you know, instead of Ohio State, they probably would have suffered the same fate as Ohio State anyways. It doesn't diminish the greatness that was the Big Ten this year. Top conference in college football, far beating the SEC, and give credit to the Pac-12 as well, because they've had a pretty good showing in these bowl games too, especially with USC winning the Rose Bowl. So the Pac-12 is winning some strides in these bowl games. That's how these conferences are judged, is how they do in these bowl games, which doesn't make any sense to me, only because, well, you know, they're bowl games. They're not conference games. So any judge how conference is out of conference doesn't make any sense, not to mention these conference teams, these conferences don't face each other. So, but it's a good victory for USC, and it certainly shines very well on the Pac-12 and the Big Ten for staging what is going to be the best game of the bowl season, in my opinion. And we'll just see what happens with the national championship game and how little personality Nick Saban brings and how much pain Clemson can bring trying to get revenge against Alabama for being in the national championship game next year. I got a caller on the line here with the last 4 of 2494. This is Steve Itzkowitz of the Sport Diehards. Who am I speaking with?
Steve, hi, it's Mauricio Rodriguez from Ontario. How are you?
Mauricio Rodriguez, my Toastmaster buddy. How are you, sir?
Doing good. How are you? First and foremost, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. So you've been listening to the show. What do you think so far?
Oh, man, I just looked it up right now online and wanted to give you a big support, and you're doing a really good job. And let's talk football.
Let's talk football here. Well, I was just talking about the Rose Bowl, actually. We'll get into some NFL instead, but I was just talking about the Rose Bowl between USC and Penn State. Did you have a chance to watch that game, Mauricio, and how do you react to what happened?
That's the football that I love. I love college football ever since I was in middle school, and I can't remember when was the last time I got really excited about the Rose Bowl. This was a very, very highly anticipated game, and it did not disappoint. From start to finish, it was a nail-biting game, and although SC won, I'm a big Penn State fan at heart, but got to hand it out to both teams. They both played phenomenal.
Indeed, they did. It was a really, really good game. Each team had a double-digit lead in this game. And each team was able to overcome that double-digit lead. It kind of felt like a game where whoever had the ball last would win, and that's exactly what happened with USC getting it back after holding Penn State to a 3-and-out and getting the big field goal. And now, do you believe that USC, you know, revisionist history, hindsight is 20/20 and all of that stuff. It is what it is. But do you believe that USC with this victory, Penn State with the way they played, that these two teams should have been in the national championship picture over the University of Washington and Ohio State?
The way I look at it is, and it's very debatable because although Penn State did beat Ohio State and SC did beat Washington, both of them going to the college football playoffs, ultimately what it comes down to is schedule strength and then also the overall season. Yes, SC went ahead and you know had three losses in the first, I think, five weeks in the season. And then Penn State as well, too, had a couple of losses in the first couple of weeks. But overall, I think it was a right pick for them to be matched up at the Rose Bowl. And just because I traditionally growing up here in Southern California, I've always grown up to accustomed to the Pac-12 versus the Big Ten showdown. And I can't think of two highly respected, better teams to represent both the universities and coming here to the granddaddy of them all. I love the result for that. But one thing I do want to say is actually in regards to the comment that you mentioned about his name's Saquon Barkley, and he's a sophomore. And
Saquon Barkley. Okay. I couldn't remember his last name for the life of me. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. But him and then also the quarterback from SC, I can't think of his name right now, that they both have very promising
Sam
careers.
Darnold,
that's correct. They both have very promising careers, and I can't wait. This is just going to anticipate it for a better Rose Bowl for next year, and I hope we get a rematch.
Potentially. Is Trace McSorley coming back, actually? I got to see if he is, because if he and Saquon Barkley come back, then they might not have to rely on these second-half comebacks as much as they did this year. And I completely agree with you about USC, why USC is not in the Final Four. And I think Penn State, you know, the case for Penn State is stronger now than maybe they should have been in the Final Four because they beat Ohio State. They won the Big Ten. It was just a matter of timing, you know, with Ohio State getting in there and then getting – you know, blown out by Clemson the way they did, 31-0. So you can make a case for Penn State, but not for USC, because at the end of the day, there's not a single team in the college football playoff that didn't at least have double-digit victories when they got, yep, you know, when they were invited to the dance, so to speak. So for USC to have played in the Rose Bowl after the start they got off to, and to basically luck into selecting the right quarterback to start over Max Brown and having them play the way he did as a redshirt freshman, I think they have to be absolutely delighted with how this season went and very anticipatory as to how next season could go, with the expectations will be much higher. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you on that. I have a question for you, though, in regards to the CFP playoffs, this whole new thing that just emerged about 3 years ago. Now, in your opinion, if a team is selected to go to the college football playoffs, do they have to win their conference in order to get to the playoffs?
No, that's what Ohio State did. I mean, Ohio State proved
that, I mean, apparently you don't. You know, strength of schedule, the conference you play in, you know, Ohio State was able to cover. I think winning your conference is definitely better to enter the college football playoff with. Gives you a higher level of credibility having won your conference, particularly if it's a Power 5 conference like the Big Ten is. But that's how good the Big Ten won this year, in that your winner went to the Rose Bowl and your runner-up, you know, as it were, well, not technically a runner-up, that was Wisconsin, but your runner-up of the regular season, Ohio State, you know, was able to go to the college football playoffs, showing how good the Big Ten is. And I don't think their results in these bowl games should diminish that, by the way. A lot of people say, well, it looks like they're not that good losing these bowl games. That's got nothing to do with their conference. It's got to do with matchups. It's a whole different argument.
Right.
I think it's better, if I understand what you're getting at, I think it's better if you do win your conference championship, especially if your conference championship game, because that's kind of the idea. You know, if you want to compete for a national championship, then win a regional championship, like in the NBA, win your division, win your conference, win the league. I think it's better that way. But do you have to win your conference to get into the college football playoff? No. Ohio State did that, you know, this year. And, you know, that could be the case next year if you're talking about timing and the right, and a team that has a strong strength of schedule, and but also plays in a Power 5 conference that was considered to be the best conference, like the Big Ten was this year. So you don't have to, but I think that's the way it should be, to answer your question.
Right, yeah, I agree with you on that part as well, too, because technically, if it would have been like the second runner-up, talking about the Pac-12, Washington going to the CFP playoffs, then the runner-up, which was, I think, Colorado going into winning, losing the Pac-12 championship, they should have gotten dibs for the Rose Bowl. But I think it would have been a better matchup with SC, because SC had just that momentum going on for the last, what, 8-9 weeks, and then it anticipated for a better matchup with Penn State, which resulted with tonight's victory.
Well, yeah, and I knew coming into this game that it was going to be a rip-rocking game. I mean, there are going to be more fireworks in this game than on the 4th of July combined, with all the fireworks displays you have out there. I knew that coming in. The over-under was 60 in this game, and they blew the doors off of that, because scoring 101 points in this game. So, you know, I knew it was going to be an offensive fireworks display. That's a great way to open up the new year here, and the excitement of the new year. This game epitomized that. So, if anything, the committee did us a favor by putting Washington into the Final Four, because you knew if that was going to be the case, the Rose Bowl will be able to choose who their replacement would be, because usually it's the Pac-10 winner against the Big Ten winner. You know, Penn State was going to be there when Ohio State got into the college football playoff as the Big Ten winner. They put USC in there. So the committee, you know, keeping an eye on those potential TV ratings and great matchups that people would enjoy, got it right putting Washington in against Alabama, because they were going to lose to them anyways, and matching and allowing for a matchup to be created in the Rose Bowl between Penn State and USC, turning into, like I said, what has been the best game of the bowl season so far, and even regardless of how
Absolutely.
The national championship game goes between Clemson and Alabama, I think it is going to turn out to be the best game in terms of scoring, excitement, big plays, unpredictability, and the granddaddy of them all. The Rose Bowl is the Rose Bowl is a crap, and USC in this game proved to be more than just a great condom. Think about that. You know, the Trojans proved to be more than just a great condom in this game. They proved to be a great football team. I'm pushing the envelope yet again. I'm trying to be funnier on the show here, saying some crazy things.
I know. You're doing good. You're doing really
good.
Yeah,
we used to make a joke like, Trojans are only good for one thing. Think of things that people do on a Friday night when they're feeling a certain way. Ha, ha, ha. Well, now USC is back, so now those jokes might go to the wayside there. Can't believe I'm saying this to a fellow Toastmaster, by the way. Keep this between us. Are there any Toastmasters are listening right now? Hey, it's Sports Talk Radio. This is the way it goes. Trust me, I will not make these jokes at a Toastmaster meeting or event. I promise. What do you think, you know, since you're a college football guy, let me ask about this before we get into some NFL stuff here. What do you expect out of the national championship game? Besides the boring no personality Nick Saban press conference, what do you expect out of the national championship game between Clemson and Alabama, Mauricio?
And I have noticed that, actually, when you mentioned the blind side of how he does have that personality, Nick Saban is known for that personality. I remember even growing up when he was with LSU, and then he was with Michigan State before that. And he's just that monotone personality. He's very, very well focused. He's very, he just gets right to the point.
He never goes off duty. Actually, he never goes off duty. He's always on his guard. It's like, He's never going to be more successful than he is now. He could just add to how successful he's been. You know, just listen up. You know, just.
Yeah, I mean,
enjoy
it. Toastmasters.
Even Kobe Bryant did towards the end of his career. He was as intense as they got. And even he can loosen up a little bit and enjoy some of his success.
Yeah.
Why can't Nick Saban, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. My expectation for the national championship is I love the fact how Clemson – it's going to be a rematch. And I expect Clemson who doesn't want a rematch, especially of how close last year's national championship game was. And for Clemson to come back, and then I hope it's going to be a Clemson victory. I'm just tired of. I love Alabama. Great kudos for Nick Saban for turning this program around since I can't remember when, but it seems to me that every time Alabama comes on, this is me during the regular season, I just can't watch them. I don't want to watch a team get slaughtered by 40 points, by 50 points. It just gets boring after a while. And to me, coming back from where they were and coming back and then they had a great performance against Ohio State. And now I want them to get that title back. I want them to get the revenge just because it's a sweet victory for anyone to come back, especially from a loss of a year ago. And for them to hold up that trophy.
Clemson, I think, has a fighting shot to win this game because I think Alabama's offense right now, particularly that Lane Kiffin is out and Steve Sarkisian is coming in, you know, and even though he can run a system similar to what Lane Kiffin ran, there's still going to be some differences in communication and signal calling, and Steve Sarkisian is a little bit better managing people than Lane Kiffin ever has been or ever will be. So there's a bit of a transition to make there, and the timing of it is not particularly good. So I think offensively Alabama will come into this game and maybe not be as effective as they could be defensively. That's where you got to be. If Clemson's going to win this game, they have got to win first and second down against Alabama. If you go into third and long against Alabama, you're dead. It's just that simple. You've got to win first and second down against Alabama because Alabama defensively has the most dominant defense arguably in the country. Some would say LSU. Certainly we did not see any dominant defense in the Rose Bowl tonight. Maybe the two most dominant offenses in the country we saw in the Rose Bowl tonight, but not defensively. But LSU out of the SEC also very, very good. And you saw what they did in their bowl game. Against Louisville and Lamar Jackson, Heisman Trophy winner, who was reduced to, well, if you were to second guess anything, maybe they should add the Heisman Trophy winner to the quarterback after they play the bowl games to see how he does. And Lamar Jackson certainly did not live up to his Heisman billing in that game, not even close.
That was
33 yards rushing, not even 200 yards passing. Yeah, so it's. That's a bad part about handing out the Heisman Trophy before the bowl season begins is that if you don't perform quite as well, you got people like me just second-guessing you left and right. But he deserved to win it based on the regular season, but not based on the bowl performance. And if he's made a first-round pick by any NFL team, like Josh McDaniel made Tim Tebow the first-round pick, then just fire him immediately and don't waste time. Just cut the checks and get out of here. How dare you dare draft that guy first round? I don't care how many Heismans he won. He's not an NFL quarterback. But I digress.
Exactly.
You've got to win the battle of first and second down against Alabama. Deshaun Watson has got to be the man in this game. Defensively, I think Clemson could hold their own against the Alabama offense. So if that's what you're going to get from the Clemson defense, you have got to make sure that the offense – is making that payoff, win first and second down. Deshaun Watson making plays with his legs, you know, buying time as Alabama's putting pressure on because that's what they're going to look to do, and making plays down the field with his arm and his legs. If they can win the battle of first and second down and not get that, and another thing, and an even bigger key, You cannot, under any circumstances, turn the ball over against Alabama. Because if Alabama gets one turnover this game, chances are they will get another. They get turnovers in bunches. And when they start turning a team over, and that's how they were able to get by Washington, is those two turnovers in which Alabama scored on each of them. That was the difference in that game. If Washington had avoided, maybe committed only one turnover or none, they would have had a really good chance to win that game, but it wasn't meant to be because the two turnovers basically sealed their fate. Clemson has got to learn from that and not turn the ball over at all. If they can avoid turnovers in this game, throughout this game, they'll have that many more plays that they can run offensively. They can win those first and second down battles, tire Alabama's defense out a little bit, because in a game where Alabama doesn't get multiple turnovers, they may not know what to do with themselves. If that's what they expect and it doesn't happen, who knows how they're going to react. So you cannot turn the ball over at all if you're Clemson, and you've got to win first and second down and just run play after play after play after play and have Deshaun Watson be the Heisman Trophy finalist 2 years in a row in this particular game, making plays with his arms and his legs. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I can't wait. I can't wait for it. It's going to be a great matchup. And I hope that it lives to the expectation. And I want to make a prediction, if you don't mind.
By all means. I have Alabama winning. I just think defensively they're going to be too strong. Don't have to score that many points when you're that good defensively. What about you?
Close game, but success. Revenge is the sweetest success. And I'm going to say 28-35 with Clemson Tigers.
Fair enough. As a friend of mine taught me, my buddy Jack said, always pick the best unit on the field. The best unit on the field in that game is the Alabama defense. So that's what I'm going with. But if Clemson win, I wouldn't be surprised about it either. So I congratulate you for sticking your neck out, picking Clemson where a lot of other people won't. And it makes sense.
Absolutely.
But I like Alabama because I think the best unit on the field in that game will be the Alabama defense, which means Alabama won't have to score as much. Yes, Deshaun Watson made plays on him last year, but then they didn't see Deshaun Watson before. They have tape on him now and a little time to prepare, and I think that favors any Nick Saban coach team, personality or no personality. So I like Alabama. In a lower-scoring game, I'll say Alabama 24, Clemson 20 in a close game. So we will see what happens. I think the defenses will play very well in the game, because the team kind of knows each other at this point. They haven't faced each other last year. So that makes the game even more intriguing. Moving on to the NFL. Do you follow the NFL at all, Mauricio?
I do not, actually. I'll let you take over from there. But thank you very much for taking my call. And again, happy New Year.
Thank you for coming on here. Great job. Thank you very much. That's Mauricio Rodriguez, my buddy in Toastmasters and a college football fan, and a good one as well. So I'd love to have you back on at some point. Thank you very much, sir. Happy New Year. I'm sure I'll see you at an event sometime soon.
Likewise, brother. Okay, take care.
You got it. Take care. All right. NFL. Looking back on the 2016 season, the MVP and the LVP. Now, a lot of people are saying Tom Brady should be the MVP. You know, what is it with Tom Brady? The guy is suspended for 4 games, but people are counting as the MVP. And my question is, why? He was suspended for 4 games. How do you make a guy an MVP when he was suspended, putting his team in a potentially difficult position? Now, the Patriots survived that 4-game stretch because Jimmy Garoppolo played well along with Bryce Brissett. But he still got suspended. And to me, that is no reason to make him an MVP. The guy I make the MVP played all season long, threw touchdown passes to 13 different receivers, and led his team, despite the fact that their defense is shaky, and even though their head coach is defensive-oriented in Dan Quinn. I'm talking about the Atlanta Falcons, and specifically I'm talking about one Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan had a career year. Led the Falcons to the NFC South Division Championship when Carolina defaulted and Tampa just wasn't able to close it out after coming back from the dead, basically. But Atlanta did it with a defense that is mediocre at best, getting better, but mediocre at best, with a defensive head coach and Dan Quinn, who was a defensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks when they won the Super Bowl. That's my MVP. He played every single game. He threw touchdown passes to 13 different receivers. That's Peyton Manning-like. Peyton Manning was always known for spreading the ball around. A lot of good receivers between great receivers catch the balls of Peyton Manning. Guys like Dallas Clark, Reggie Wayne, you know, to go along with Marvin Harrison. And, you know, you saw the same thing in Denver where, you know, Demaryius Thomas was a man, but you saw a lot of Emmanuel Sanders, Owen Daniels, and other guys, you know, that were stepping up to catch passes out of the backfield from Peyton Manning. That was Matty Ryan this year, spreading the ball around, a true team leader. And a guy with a nickname of Matty Ice. How do you not give an MVP with a performance like that to a guy named Matty Ice? It's a cool, no pun intended, it's a nickname of a guy that sounds like a winner. And they won a first-round bye this year. Going to the Super Bowl? No, I doubt it. I think that's going to be the Giants or the Cowboys. And I'll talk more about the NFL playoffs in a second where I give you my predictions on the first round of my upset special. But Matty Ice played every game. Tom Brady didn't. Yeah, I know Tom Brady had an incredible 12-game stretch. But Matty Ice had an incredible 16-game stretch. You got to give credit where credit is due. Make him the MVP and make Tom Brady the offensive player of the year in the AFC. That's fine. Not to mention that Matt Ryan deserves it. He absolutely deserves it. And the Falcons deserve some recognition for the success they've had this year, despite a mediocre defense. That's how good their offense this year, their defense this year has been their offense, keeping that team in the game and winning an NFC South title in a division that has been, you know, one of the better divisions in the last couple of years. Maybe not as much this year, even with Tampa coming up. And New Orleans kind of struggling at times, but even they got good in the middle of the year. And Carolina was bad basically all year long. But, you know, in a competitive division, a cool nickname, and 13 different receivers catching a baker's dozen of touchdowns. Think about that. That's about as tasty as Krispy Kreme donuts, throwing to that many receivers, and it left a pretty good taste. And NFL fans who love great passing, and Atlanta Falcon fans, obviously, who are overjoyed with how the Falcons have done this year, getting a first-round bye, meaning they will host a playoff game in the second round. That's saying a lot, and Matt Ryan is the biggest reason why, and without Julio Jones being completely healthy and without Roddy White being there because he retired. I'm telling you, Matt Ryan is your MVP and should be the MVP if Tom Brady wins it. Then if Tom Brady ends up winning the MVP, then you're essentially saying that, and even though we love a good comeback story, the Atlanta Falcons are a comeback story. An average team the last couple of years, Matt Ryan being a good quarterback, a great one this year, maybe the best in the league, by far the most productive. If Tom Brady wins it, then you know, then the NFL should become an extension of the Republican Party and just pick the winner before the winner could be determined the old-fashioned way, and that's by earning it. This is not about politics. It's about greatness. And the best player in the NFL this year, in my opinion, was Matt Ryan. He meant everything to his team. You take him off the Falcons, especially with Julio Jones' injury issues, they are nowhere. And that's another reason of MVP. 13 different receivers caught a touchdown pass from him, and he set career marks in every single way this year. Yards, touchdowns, passer rating, well over 100. And he played all 16 games in the most physical, punishing sport in the land outside of hockey. If that's not MVP, if the math of that doesn't add up to MVP, then hire a new mathematician to help you figure it out. It's not Tom Brady. Make him the offensive player of the year in the AFC. That's fine. He deserves that. And he does deserve MVP consideration. But to give it to him over Matt Ryan is basically saying that Matt Ryan is basically saying that Tom Brady is indestructible. And we know that's not the case. Matt Ryan deserves the MVP. He's my 2016 NFL MVP. And I hope the voters, the people that can vote, recognize that and agree with me on that. This leads me to the 2016 least valuable player, the $72 million man, Brock Osweiler, all 6'8", and with the weirdest throwing motion that I've ever seen a 6'8" quarterback make or a tall quarterback ever make. All this guy has to do is stand over the top of the defense and throw down on it, but he refuses to do that, and I can't figure out why. I could do this, and I'm anything but an NFL quarterback, or a quarterback, period. How is it that Brock Osweiler could succeed, or could fail miserably as he did this year, getting benched in favor of Tom Savage, by the way, which I thought was a gutsy move on Bill O'Brien's part. And, you know, the Raiders will be hosted by the Texans this weekend and probably win that game because Mac McGloin as a backup quarterback is better than any starting quarterback they have, and that's going to be Osweiler. So, not to mention that the Raiders are familiar with Brock Osweiler, having played against him in the AFC West when he was playing for Denver. So that gives the Raiders an even bigger edge in that game, even though they'll be on the road because they're a wild card team going against a division winner. That's the only advantage Texans have in this game. So I like the Raiders to win that game, even with a backup quarterback, Mac McGloin, being in there. That said, Brock Osweiler is by far the least valuable player. Leaving Denver, getting paid a contract. I'll explain why he got the contract momentarily. And getting benched in year number one of a four-year deal, in which he's guaranteed to collect half that money and may only collect half that money ultimately because it doesn't look like he's going to be their quarterback for the next 3 years after this one. That's your least valuable player, especially considering the way he throws. I mean, just throw it forward. Put your high arm over your shoulder and just throw it straight. With a little curve, you know, break your wrist a little bit. Not literally, but break your wrist a little bit and just throw it straight. Don't sight on it. Don't feel like you're a six-footer trying to get it on around the defense. You can throw over the defense, Brock. But you got rocks in your head. So maybe I should call you Rock Osweiler instead because you got rocks in your head apparently preventing you from doing that. So I'm going to start calling him Rock Osweiler. Actually, Rockhead Osweiler because that's that. He's a rockhead. Stupid. But, man, is he a well-paid, stupid quarterback? Which leads to the answer to the question, how do you get all that money he did? A friend of mine asked, my buddy Norm asked for this yesterday when we were hanging out at Surf Dogs at Indy Beach. I said it's real simple. 10 years ago, Brock Osweiler does not get that contract just for having a few good games for the Broncos. He does now. Why? Because the NFL is a quarterback-driven league. And this is why the NFL has to stop being a quarterback-driven league, because a lot of the guys that are quarterbacks in the NFL aren't good enough to get the contracts that they're getting. Jay Cutler, prime example of that. Brock Osweiler could be another Jay Cutler minus the attitude. You know, so many guys out there overpaid just because they are a quarterback at the right time in the NFL's existence. That's why he's getting paid as much money as he is. If you're a backup quarterback, look at Matt Moore. I'm sorry, Matt Moore. What was the name of the backup quarterback? Matt Flynn. That's what I'm thinking of. Backup in Green Bay, has a couple of really good games, and then gets a big contract for Seattle. It doesn't start because they drafted Russell Wilson. If you're a backup and you have a few good games, they will pay you starters money. They will pay you star quarterback money, even though it turned out to be a star quarterback. I'm not surprised this happened because Houston and quarterbacks do not mix. For years has been one quarterback, at least a quarterback away from being a championship contender once they make the playoffs. But they haven't been able to get over the hump. I don't think it's going to be any different this year against the Raiders because quarterback-wise, they just can't cut it. Even when they had a star running back in Arian Foster, the guy couldn't stay healthy enough to really show what he could do over a whole season. You know, offensively, there's always been something that has helped, that has hindered Houston from getting to the next level. But no, defensively, usually they're very, very good. And offensively, usually they run the football very well and have a great wide receiver in DeAndre Hopkins. But quarterback-wise, they haven't been able to put it together. So the worst thing that happened to Brock Osweiler and Houston is they married each other, and Houston benched them and now has to pay him at least $36 million for him to be speculated on a week-by-week basis if he's going to get benched enough if he starts to falter. And he will falter some more, believe me, unless he learns how to throw the football the right way that a 6'8 guy that can look down a defense should throw it. Like throwing a Nerf ball, real easy. So that's your least valuable player, and he's going to lead the Houston Texans to yet another first-round bye. Things you can count on every year in life. Taxes, your birthday, New Year's, Thanksgiving, and the Houston Texans losing in the first round anytime they get there. Kind of like the Cincinnati Bungles. I'm sorry, Bengals. Oops. My bad. but I need to take a quick break here because my voice is giving out on me a little bit. I'm going to go drink some water. No, not vodka. I'm not drinking and showing. You know, some people drink and drive. I don't drink and show. I drink after the show because usually I drink just to forget how bad I was during the show. Hopefully you're enjoying the show, though. Thank you, Hank. Thank you very much for hanging on the line here. When we come back, I will predict the NFL wild card games as well as the upset special for you to look out for those of you that might be in a gambling mood. For those of you that made a resolution that you're going to make your sports knowledge pay off more for you this year, I'm going to help you accomplish that resolution right away so you can check it off the 2017 resolution list. You know, the one that is eventually going to end up as a liner in your cat litter box. Yeah, that one. So we'll be right back to talk about those matchups and to make some predictions on those games, as well as get into Ronda Rousey and reacting to her two-fight flameout and predict her future. That's coming up next. In the meantime, you're listening to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS, radioafs.com, radioafs.com, facebook.com/radioafs, facebook.com/sportdiehards. Don't go anywhere. Enjoy home. Tribute to Candlestick by Heat. This is home. 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 Upper reserves in the very top. Sidelines in the lower box. See, my tailgate is in the main lot. Own a place for six and it don't stop. Go. Now once that fog rolls in and you feel them strong winds, man, welcome to the stick. Where the fans go hard until the end through a loss or a win. Yeah, brother, that's the stick. 70,000 faithful got it rocking. With Owens White connected on that sprint right option. Head to toe, red and gold, you see I'm not a pride. When John Taylor took that punt return for 95, we went crazy, dominated the 80s. See, I was just a baby, but Pops would always take me to the stick to see the greats. Dean, Haley, and Craig, Ronnie, Brian, and Brent, Candlestick represent. What's up? All the memories make my head spin. When Michael Carter picked six on the Redskins, and Steve took that victory lap after he just sent the Cowgirls crying back to Texas. We know it's old, we know it's cold, but this is Candlestick and we call it home. Forever faithful, red and gold. The mother fans hate it, but we love it though. Cause this is home, this is home. Welcome to the stick, yeah this is home. And even though they finna blow it up, you showing up, all my diehards know what's up. My season ticket holder standing proud, and back surgery just couldn't keep my Montana down. Chill, see I was caught up in the moment when I heard Joe Starkey yelling. Watching Young get away from the Vikings, the comebacks on the Saints and the Giants. Hitting Pittsburgh right in the mouth on Monday night, the lights went out. Divisional round with Green Bay when Cap took off on them all. That pack of linebackers still looking for the ball. You see, we all witnessed greatness when Jerry broke the touchdown record on the Raiders. When Hurst turned it up and got ghost. And Alex hit Vernon on the post. It might be old, it might be cold, but I left my heart here, cause this is home. We know it's old, we know it's cold, but this is Candlestick and we call it home. Forever faithful, red and gold. The mother fans hate it, but we love it though. Cause this is home, this is home. Welcome to the stick, yeah this is home. And even though they finna blow it up, we showing up, all my diehards know what's up. We know it's old, we know it's cold, but this is Candlestick and we call it home. Forever faithful, red and gold. The mother fans hate it, but we love it though. Cause this is home, Welcome back to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. I'm your host, Steve Eskowitz. It's time for the 2017 NFL playoffs. Don't you find it weird that the playoffs begin in the year, that the actual year when the season began? That's why it's hard to remember when these Super Bowls get played. Like what Super Bowl was that, or what year was it played? Like, if it's the 2016 season, it's the 2017 Super Bowl. You know, so it's, it makes it hard to remember. But anyways, that's not important. What is important is that the playoffs are here. You know what I love about the NFL playoffs? Guys are going to hit other guys even harder, and I'm not going to feel a thing because I only watch. Now, these guys get paid a little bit more money to do that than I do to watch. That being said, there's something to be said about being able to wake up in the morning after watching a great NFL playoff football game of guys trying to just murder each other on every single play. Not literally, of course. So it's a real treat to be able to watch and wake up following morning being able to walk normally like a normal human being. But I digress. The matchups, well, I already mentioned who I think is going to win the Raiders sets of games. I like the Raiders in that game, even with a backup quarterback. Because like I said, Matt McGloin is better than Brock Osweiler and Tom Savage combined, and the Raiders should win this game. They really should. The only reason why they have to go on the road is because the NFL has ruled that the wild card team has to play against a division winner on their home field, even though the Raiders had a better record. That's why the Raiders should win this game. They're just the better team, even with a backup quarterback. So I like the Raiders in that game. Lions at Seahawks. You know, I want to get on around on the, about the Seahawks momentarily here, and that, you know, everyone is, you know, all these supposed experts. Why can't they just that Seattle's a broken team? Why is it, you know, I get it. These guys don't know what's going to happen. But then you go by the probabilities. You go by the odds. You go by, yeah, the probabilities, stats, odds, all those things. The Seahawks are missing possibly the most crucial member of the Legion of Boom in Earl Thomas III. Offensively, they can't block anybody. They can't run. And Russell Wilson is not Joe Montana. I'm sorry, he's not. He's not even Tom Brady. He's not even. Listen, he's good, but he's not good enough to overcome the liabilities that Seattle has offensively, not to mention Earl Thomas not being back to protect Richard Sherman, who is a good cornerback, not as great as people think he is. He benefits from being a part of the Legion of Boom. He's been a poor member of the Legion of Boom. But I would say Patrick Peterson is a pure cornerback, or Joe Hayden over in Cleveland are better pure cover cornerbacks than Richard Sherman is. And without Earl Thomas back there, that can be exposed. You can throw on him. And the Lions will certainly attempt to do that, and Matt Stafford will certainly attempt to do that. So anyone, any of these analysts who think Seattle is still dangerous and still a Super Bowl team, well, that ship sailed when they had to play in the first round. If they had a first round bye, then I can understand your point. But since they have to play in the first round, meaning that they went from the number 2 seed to the number 3 seed, basically tells me that they are going in the wrong direction. All of a sudden, they're supposed to be a different team come playoff time. You know, everyone talks about being a new person in a new year, but the fact is you're the same person in a new year. It's just you get a little bit better. Seattle's not getting any better. They're getting worse. And they had to, all they had to do was beat San Francisco at the end of the year, by the way. And that's not very hard to do because the only team that San Francisco beat this year were the Rams. That said, I like them to beat the Lions in this game because the Lions offensively might not be able to take advantage of some Seattle's weaknesses. Seattle should be able to run the football a little bit with Thomas Rawls. And defensively, Matt Stafford has the injured thumb on his throwing hand, and that's going to be an issue playing outside in Seattle. They're not going to be in a dome. They're going to be outside. They have to travel. It's a younger Lions team. I think the Lions did well just to get into the playoffs, to be honest with you, after Calvin Johnson retired and Ndamukong Suh left for Detroit. I think it's a team on the rise. I just don't think it's their year for playoff success. So I'll take Seattle to win this game on them having home field advantage, but I'm not going to for 1 second quantify or validate any experts saying, well, you're still going to watch out for Seattle because of who they are. Who they are now is not quite who they were. It's not the same as who they were when they went to back-to-back Super Bowls and lost one of those Super Bowls, by the way. They haven't been the same team since, and especially when you consider that maybe the most important piece in that Super Bowl success, particularly offensively, no longer plays for them, and that's one Marshawn Lynch. Because Thomas Rawls has not been the consistent replacement that they hoped he would be because he can't stay healthy. So this is not the same Seattle team. Experts, take your head out of your ass and see that the Seahawks are not going to the Super Bowl this year. Just call it. And if you're wrong, say so. I'll admit if I'm wrong. If the Seahawks go to the Super Bowl, I'll be the first to admit that I'm wrong. But to go to the Super Bowl, you need to be a complete football team. That is not Seattle. So they'll beat the Lions, and then they're going to lose in the second round either to the Falcons or the Cowboys. So we will see how it turns out. Dolphins at Steelers. Matt Moore, backup quarterback for Ryan Tannehill, playing really well, and Adam Gase has his team. Jay Ajayi and his running this year have been very, very impressive. And that's what the Dolphins are going to have to do against the Steelers, because we know the Steelers have Le'Veon Bell, who does it all. He runs, he catches, he blocks, he smokes weed. Hopefully he doesn't do that before this game or potentially lose out on this game, because we know Le'Veon Bell doesn't like to start the season with the team because he prefers missing the first few games to get him ready for these playoff runs he wants to make. So he does it all, but hopefully part of that all is not smoking weed before this game so that he'll be available for the Steelers in this game. But the Dolphins, if they can run the football with J.J. and Matt Moore continue to play well in the passing game, the Dolphins are good defensively in the front seven. And the Steelers are obviously the better offensive team in this game with a defense that is getting better, but still the Dolphins could potentially take advantage of, especially if they could sustain some drives against a Pittsburgh defense that you can score on. Ryan Shazier is a great linebacker, but he can't cover up some of the issues they have in their secondary. So the Dolphins can move all in this game, and if they run the football, they can move the ball and keep the Steelers' offense on the sidelines. That's what they're going to have to do. My concern for the Dolphins is having to travel to Pittsburgh to play this game, because the difference between Miami and Pittsburgh, aside from several letters, is the climate. It's a little nicer down in Miami this time of the year than it is in Pittsburgh. Believe me, I know this because when I lived in Connecticut, I flew to Florida every single winter just to get out of the cold for a week. And that was my tradition. I would fly to Tampa. Not quite as far south as Miami is, but still. The Dolphins traveling to Pittsburgh as a young team, a relatively inexperienced team in the playoffs, having returning to the playoffs after seemingly a day's age. I like the Steelers in this game because they have more experience. I think their offense will be able to move against the Dolphins. And I think ultimately there's just too much offensively with Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, and Ben Roethlisberger, and they're a team on a mission, by the way, as well. You know, they're the team that's supposed to be the biggest threat to the Patriots to go to the Super Bowl out of the AFC. So I like the Steelers to move up, but I like a close game. So I'm going to say Steelers 24, Dolphins 20, with the Steelers moving on. And then we get to the most intriguing game of the weekend. Giants-Packers. We all know about the hot team coming into the playoffs, the team that just won their way into the playoffs and won their way to a division title, in this case the Green Bay Packers, who went into Detroit and won, game-winning streak, take the NFC North in what was a revolving door of potential division winners this year, with Minnesota, then Detroit, and Green Bay coming out on top at the end. And here's a Giants team, inconsistent offensively. Eli Manning, we know what he's done in past postseasons. He is a prime-time postseason quarterback. And he's got arguably the best receiver in the game to throw to, in Odell Beckham Jr. But they don't run the football. They're going to need to do that in this game. Especially against a Packers team that right now is being led by Aaron Rodgers, who is playing like the MVP that he has been in the past. And is fulfilling his own prediction. The Packers are coming in red hot offensively, playing decent defensively behind Clay Matthews. But the Giants come into this game knowing that they have the best defense on the field. The Giants defense right now is playing better than any defense out there. And even though the Packers come in hot, I think the Giants are a bad matchup for them, because the Giants defensively can put pressure on Rodgers and can slow down Green Bay's run. They're going to have to run the football to take the pressure off Rodgers. I think the Giants are going to win this game. That's my upset special of the week, because I think the Giants defense will be the best unit on the field. And I think offensively, Eli Manning will make enough plays to Odell Beckham against a questionable Green Bay secondary, and the Giants will end up winning this game 17-14. That's my prediction. A lower scoring game because the Giants defense is that good. And I have the Giants beating the Packers. I do. Yes, I'm going against the hot team. Can you believe it? Everyone will ride the hot team, particularly when the hot team is manned by Aaron Rodgers. Fine. Ride Mr. R-E-L-A-X. But understand that you might be riding into a wall known as the Giants' defense. Kablam! Ooh. That hurt. And that's what Aaron Rodgers is going to say after this game. I'll let the Giants to win it, actually. 17-14. That's my upset special of the weekend. Super Bowl. Patriots out of the AFC. Best team. All their games at Foxborough. They do lose at Foxborough. Yeah, their defense is mediocre compared to Belichick's standards, but so what? They have home field advantage. And who says they have to play great defensively, considering how great offensively they're playing right now, even without Rob Gronkowski? You saw what they did to Miami yesterday, a team that has been a nemesis to the Dolphins to the Patriots the last few years. So they are coming in ready. They have home field advantage, and they are on a mission, and Lord knows, to try to win a Super Bowl after Tom Brady missed the first four games of the year. They also traded Jamie Collins, which I didn't agree with, by the way, but hasn't hurt him too much. So I like the Patriots out of the AFC. Out of the NFC, Cowboys, Giants. Man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man, oh, man. Got to go with the Giants. Yep. I think the Patriots and Giants are going to rematch in the Super Bowl for the third time. I'm going against the Cowboys. I'm going for the Giants. The Giants know how to beat the Cowboys. And they're not going to be intimidated no matter where they play. As a matter of fact, they like playing in Texas Stadium a little bit more than they like playing in New York against the Cowboys. They've been very successful there over the years. So I think that the Giants and the Patriots are going to the Super Bowl. Now, if the Cowboys get there, it would not surprise me. So Giants-Patriots, my first pick. Patriots-Cowboys, my second pick. But I think the Cowboys are going to, as a younger team, particularly offensively, as led by, they have a great future in front of them. And they will be back. But I just feel like the Giants' defense, combined with their offense, combined with Eli Manning's sense of when the playoffs happen and his ability to make big plays, is going to send the Giants to yet another Super Bowl. So Giants-Patriots on the Giants' mystique in the playoffs, with the Cowboys having a bright future led by their two super rookies, but not quite ready to go to the Super Bowl this year. It's been a little too easy for them. And eventually, they're going to have to learn a lesson. Every team has to go through this. They're going to have to learn a lesson. It's going to be the Giants that teach them that lesson, making them better coming into next season, in which they will be Super Bowl favorites. We have about 7 minutes left to go. I got to get into Ronda Rousey. I'm just going to start calling her Ronda Lousy because she was lousy in her last two fights. She got the snot kicked out of here by home. And then Amanda Nunes basically finished her off and guaranteed that she is going to transition. Kind of like Sexy Rexy should transition from being a football coach. Ronda Rousey is going to transition from being a fighter to being a movie star, in which she should make a movie about her career, but have a stunt double to take all the blows that she took in her last two games. That way the makeup job is just a little bit easier on that. Ronda Rousey's fall from the top has been as quick and as painful as any I've seen in sports. I mean, that 12-game run, she put UFC women's division on the map, made a believer out of Dana White, who previously rejected the notion that this is a division that could thrive. It has. And the challenge for them will be right now to come up with the next Ronda Rousey. Could it be Nunes? Maybe. Could it be Holm? Maybe. Who knows? But the point is that Ronda Rousey's legacy is secure. She had an incredible run with all those first-round knockouts. She put the UFC women's division on the map. And she's going to be a great movie star, and she's pretty good-looking. So she could probably be a model as well, especially if those wounds heal nicely. I think. But the two-fight flame-out makes me call her Ronda Lousy, because that's exactly what she's been. I'm sorry, Ronda, but you've gone from rousing success to lousy results in your last two fights. And it's time for you to retire. If she decides that she wants to make a comeback, that she wants to go out on her own terms, it doesn't work that way in boxing. You got to be good enough to beat your opponent. She's just not good enough right now, and she hasn't evolved. She is a wrestler. She is a knockout artist in the first round and a wrestler. She is not a boxer. Her technical skills are weak, meaning if you can get her into a longer fight, she could be exposed, and that's exactly what's happened to her. Therefore, it's time for her to retire and make movies and take advantage of her good looks, but also make a movie documenting her rise and fall in UFC, which is really compelling stuff. Then I'll start calling her Ronda Rousey again, but until then I refer to her as Ronda Lousey because that's exactly what she was in the last two fights. And it's deserving criticism because when you're as dominant as she was and talking as much trash as she did, you got to back it up. Like Conor McGregor is doing on the UFC men's side, he's still doing it. And he's backing it up, so I give him credit for that. Not the same for Ronda Lousey. So Ronda Lousey, bring back Ronda Rousey, and go on to startling success in the entertainment business like you did in the UFC business. And Dana White, good luck finding the next Ronda Rousey to keep the women's division going. Well, at least you still have Conor McGregor doing what he does on the men's side, which is always going to be very, very compelling. We'll see what happens with the women's side. But Ronda Rousey put it on the map. Her legacy is secure. She's going to be a great movie star. And she'll have the advantage of a stunt double in movies where maybe she's supposed to get beat up in the script, which will be much less painful for her than her last two fights ever were. A two-fight flameout of epic proportions. Ronda Rousey, turn Ronda Lousey. In the movie industry, your UFC fighting days are over. And this show is about over. Happy New Year to everybody. Hope you had a safe and happy holiday. And just know, like I said at the top of the show, I predict much less celebrity deaths this year than last year just because the law of averages will dictate that. Kind of the law of averages will dictate when the Lakers eventually figured out how to lose to bad teams, if they're going to lose to bad teams. Or better yet, how to beat bad teams when they're supposed to. They're dyslexic. They don't know the difference between left and right. The Lakers know the difference between a bad team and a good team. They play up to good teams and nearly beat them like Utah last week. And they look listless against a Dallas Mavericks team that has less wins than they do. Go figure. That's how I know the Lakers are dyslexic right now, and that is their biggest problem. But they're a young team. That's what young teams do. They play up to more quality competition. They play down to the competition that they should be better than. Process of a young team, but damn it, if you're gonna lose against the if you're gonna lose big against the good teams, Lakers, because that don't make sense to get blown out by Dallas on your home court. I'm sorry, that just doesn't make any sense. That should be their New Year's resolution, that if we're gonna lose to bad teams, we're gonna make them beat us, as opposed to going into halftime then coming on the third quarter forgetting how and acting like we forgot how to play basketball. Just doesn't make any sense. So that's the Lakers' New Year's resolution: is if you're going to lose against bad teams, look better doing it than you have lately, especially at home. And if you're going to lose big to teams that are clearly better than you are, because that would make more sense. We're about 60 seconds left to go. I want to thank very much my buddy Mauricio Rodriguez for coming on the show here to talk college football, and for Hank Tran for contributing, and a shout out for the Winter Classic, the St. Louis Chicago Blackhawks, who will probably go back to the Stanley Cup Finals this year, because if it's not the Kings, it's usually the Blackhawks. They've been dominating lately, even with the Sharks going to the Stanley Cup last year. It looks like the Sharks will make a run there this year. So there's a shout out to the Winter Classic, Hank. Thanks for mentioning it, and thank you very much for listening to the Sport Diehards for the last 90 minutes. It's been a pleasure. Hopefully you laughed. Hopefully you learned something. And what do we learn? Well, we learned that Trojans are good for more than just one thing. And we also learned that Nick Saban needs to get laid more often so he can express a little bit more joy after his big wins in college football. And on that note, I'm out of here. You've been listening to the Sport Diehards on Radio AFS. We'll be back next Monday. In the meantime, visit Facebook.com/RadioAFS, RadioAFS.com, and Facebook.com/TheSportDiehards. My name is Steve Itzkowitz. Sports is everything, and the Sport Diehards will be here to be everything to you. Happy New Year, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. I'm out.